Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do, I can do better.
Whoa. My love, my darling, I've hungered for your touch.
Hey, welcome back everybody to Faking Movies. This is episode 53. This is the first full episode of year two, which means reboot!
What's our new thing? Are we doing the pop culture or women's health? We've been doing women's health a lot recently.
That's true, unfortunately.
Just going to go into that.
You know, yeah. I didn't actually have a plan for that going in.
All right. So same thing then?
So, same thing, I guess. Okay. Our reboot is that we are going to go back to Faking Movies Classic.
A hard reboot.
just like New Coke. So that was a dumb opening bit. I'm joined as always by my dear friend Zach. Hey, Zach.
Hey guys.
Wait, so Daniel is like cocaine and like opiates and all the other things that were in the original Coke?
That's right, my dear friend Seth.
Nice segue. Yeah.
We of course are joined by our good friend way back, what was it, episode like 20
mid-20s, yeah, something in there.
Well, anyway, our dear friend Daniel, who you I'm sure remember from his amazing Caribbean espionage romp,
it's very
the
good.
Cell. Yeah. Hey, Daniel, what's up?
Hey, that was The Cell by Tarsem Singh, right? Tarsem.
Mononym. The sometimes mononymic Tarsem Singh.
Oh, yeah, he sounds like a cool guy. Yeah.
So sorry to give him a bynym, duonym.
We call those names in the name business.
In the old name mine, so I used to mine out two or three names a day.
Well, I like to think that I learned my lesson.
Two names for 99¢ a pound, but now, it's harder.
Yeah. Thomas Georgeson and George Thomason.
Hey, those are two right there. That's a throwback, too.
That's a gimme.
As always, everybody, before we get too deep here, check out our stuff on Twitter. We are actually gaining a lot of followers lately, so that is a lot of fun. Check out our Instagram. I try to make that interesting, but, you know, mostly it's just movie posters. And, of course, check out all of our websites, fakingmovies.com and fakingmovies.wordpress for occasional updates.
Occasional
high quality updates. You're getting quality over quantity there.
If we keep saying it might eventually come true.
The secret. Yeah.
So Daniel. So as I'm sure or at least hope you know, we here at Faking Movies, we thrive on cinematic blind spots. And let's just say that this week's movie makes us want to bust those blind spots.
Bustin' makes us feel good.
Yep. That's right. So why don't you tell everybody what movie we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's me.
Yeah.
Ghost. Ghost is the movie.
Ghost.
Ghost solves the puzzle. Ooh. Blank busting. Ghost.
Yes. I think I should point out we are not doing Ghostbusters. We are just idiots.
I thought about doing a Ghostbusters related script. Like, what's the story of the ghosts, you know?
Oh, flip it.
Well, if you've watched the real Ghostbusters cartoon, they go into the containment area more than once. And it is it is a hellscape where your actions on Earth have nothing to do with the torture you end up with.
Oh, this isn't fun at all. Why did they make this part of the cartoon? This is terrible. Yeah,
this was the part of Ghostbusters that is explicitly for children.
Yeah. So, Daniel, you were thinking to do kind of like a Grendel sort of situation, but for Ghostbusters?
Yeah, but like specifically the ghost that's in the logo who looks like... Oh, not me.
Oh, not the one who's like, oh.
Yeah.
I take it you didn't see the recent attempt at Ghostbusters.
I haven't. I've only ever seen the first Ghostbusters movie. It's not out of any political leanings. That's all I've seen.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Is that an overly political movie?
People
were very angry about it.
People were really upset.
About the ladies one. Yeah,
because there are ladies involved.
Right. Yeah, right on.
Hot take. I thought it was good.
Yeah. I mean, it was fine. It wasn't amazing.
I still like the original better, but that's because it's my second favorite movie. Like, you know, that's,
Sure enough.
I like Ghostbusters, too.
So anyway,
you're the only one here that's wrong.
Daniel, keeping it real. Perfect.
So I was going to do that, but then I realized that upon clicking on the Ghostbusters Wikipedia, or not Wikipedia, but like, you know, second-rate fan-curated Wikipedia. The Wikia, thank you. Yeah, it was way too dense. It involved this whole cartoon, and I thought, oh, this is too dangerous. I better go to some other intellectual property that's not as crazy. Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with the Bible.
we've shit on the Christian religion quite a bit in this podcast, I think.
Well, this isn't really a shitting on, it's just a reimagining.
Okay. All
right. Oh, you're going full on Aronofsky now, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I am. Fuck.
Uh-oh.
that seems fine.
Hard reboot. So Daniel, what actors and actresses did we give you?
Okay, so you
we don't remember.
Yep.
In
we
order.
Assume, but we don't remember.
Yeah.
Of who I think I remember seeing on the poster. Demi Moore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And guys, it's Demi, right? Just between,
I believe
between
it is.
Not Demi?
It's not Demi.
Yeah.
Like it's not half a Moore.
Not half a
right?
Moore.
I think you are correct. Okay, yes.
Demi Moore. Patrick Swayze.
Mm.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Goldwyn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tony Goldwyn, I did not know who that was, but then I Googled him and I do know who that is.
Okay.
Yeah, he is, as we bring up a lot on this show, he is a that guy actor.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Happens a lot.
He's very much a that guy.
Yep.
Seth also gave me the year, but.
Oh, did I?
Oops. Which I believe was 1990.
It is.
Sounds right.
That sounds right, yeah.
Although I think some of my additional cast members may be dead. By 1990.
holy shit, okay.
So we'll just assume we're using early 90s like morphometrics to reanimate them.
The movie is called Ghost.
Ray Harryhausen is on set.
Oh, yeah, even better. Use claymation. Perfect.
Also, the movie is literally titled Ghosts. This is your obvious out for Dan.
Right? Yeah, that's my plot.
Do what you gotta do, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I wasn't even noticing that. That's good.
Yeah. Okay, so Daniel, take us into your reimagining Bible story.
Okay, so we open on a palm tree. It's swaying in the wind.
And we pan out.
Mother.
Some vaguely Middle Eastern music plays. There's some like horns that nobody blows into anymore.
Oh, like a shofar.
Sure. And then we pan out. We see this like Roshan. Desolate, desert-like hillside. And on the bottom, there's text, and it says the West Bank. And then, like in smaller text underneath, it says, "Don't worry, it's Bible times."
This is.
And we zoom over to another ridge, and Patrick Swayze is in period-appropriate attire.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as Seth and I discovered, I don't actually know what people were wearing, carrying, living off of, and generally just doing in 1100 BC or whenever this happened. So,
being kosher
foot coverings,
huh? I just heard food truck. or foot truck.
I said minimal foot coverings.
All right, sandals. Yeah, perfect. So
for one, yeah,
that gets to.
I said being kosher.
Oh, you're being kosher. Yeah, I mean our sandals. Yeah, sure. Sandals can be kosher.
I think by default, yeah, oftentimes, yes.
Yeah, okay, great. Okay. All right. So we see Patrick Swayze. He's in period-specific attire with period-specific weapons. He's surveying a battlefield. He says, "For Israel!" And then we see the opposing Canaanite army. And there's this cacophony of a battle ensues. And blood spills, and there's lots of like quick cuts, and hard to see which way is up and which way is down.
What am I watching? Braveheart.
Yeah, it gets real intense, real fast. There's some of the like early credits are going underneath, you know, like in pools of blood or whatever, or maybe like emblazoned on a sword if swords are in fact extant.
Period specific, right? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It's a real set piece.
They definitely had types of swords,
like, right?
I mean, a sword is a fairly fundamental shape. Like, it's not like some guy like came upon a rock that was shaped weird, and he was like, "I feel like I could hurt somebody with that."
But like, would a foot soldier have a sword? These are the questions I could have found out by googling.
Well, sure, yeah. what the other option is like hand to hand combat, like fists. So
I think it's like spears. Spears, right? Oh,
that's just like a longer sword kind.
Thank you. Yeah. All right.
Also,
I've been saying this for years.
Yeah. So there's swords in the broadest possible sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Great.
There are blades with handles of indeterminate length.
We're really getting weighed down in this.
We pan across to the Canaanite king. He looks an awful lot like Paul Lynde, and he's surrounded by
Uncle Arthur,
by like this hedonistic attaché. It's very 500, you know. It's racist, but he gets surprised by some soldier, and he has his throat slit.
But and then, before he does that, he goes, "Circle gets the square."
I mean, more timely in 1990, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. There's at least the gleam in his eyes says that, and.
You can tell, yeah.
But then the whole movie like pauses on this scene, and it rewinds. The music goes backwards. It rewinds faster and faster, and it's all being projected in Patrick Swayze's eye.
Oh, you
see, he's psychic because he's Samuel the prophet, and I assume being a prophet means you are psychic. So
yes,
he's standing atop the hill. He's smoking some strange incense. And and he says,
"Blaze it,
420, nice, blaze it."
Yeah. Says, "No, Saul Darren." And this is Goldwyn, and he's regarding his commander. It says, "We shall prevail." And his commander, Saul Darren, says, "Well, we don't have a ghost of a chance." And then it says, the title card says, "Ghost."
Okay.
There's credits. Yeah. So ends the cold open.
Perfect.
All right, so after the credits, good. We see a young Israelite couple settling in a bucolic hillside village. The little text from before says that this is the Endor Valley. Do you guys know the story of the Witch of Endor?
No.
Yeah, she...
Oh, shut. You're going to give away the story.
All right. Is it like the Witches of Eastwick?
My
version with Tesla.
She wasn't able to stop the caravan of courage. I know that much.
Whoa. Come on, Lee.
Nothing.
That's that children's movie.
Yeah.
Which one is that? The first one?
I forget if it's the first or the second one, but there are two Ewok movies. Yeah.
Oh dear.
That is weird that the Forest Moon of Endor is named after a place in the West Bank, but it is. So,
I buy it.
Well, I mean, the landscape is almost identical. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, certainly. Sure is. No
the
doubt.
The fertilest of crescents, yeah.
Crescent Moon. So there's this couple, they're making their way in the world. It's basically like a pioneer little house on the prairie situation at this point. Where they have to deal with, like, you know, these indigenous Canaanites that sometimes give them trouble.
Sure.
It's the couple is composed of Saldarin, which is again Tony Goldwyn, and his wife, who is introduced in this scene, who's played by Demi Moore, named Samantha. And so they
like from Bewitched.
Hmm. No, definitely not. And
well, I was just making the Paul Lynde and Samantha connection. That's all.
Yeah, all right.
All right. So they have some various troubles, like, you know, digging wells and things. It seems like nothing goes right for them. It's almost as if the valley that they've settled is haunted somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, in a meeting to deal with how they're going to handle these hauntings and this bad luck, Samuel, who is the Patrick Swayze commander from earlier, Saldarin, and really every adult in the village gets together in a makeshift temple.
Damon they... was the name of the husband on Bewitched.
Oh my god.
Nothing
going on. What a coincidence.
Do you have a conspiracy theory involving Bewitched already?
Do you have
based on this 1/5 of a movie we've heard?
Do you have a character named Larry Tate at all in your movie?
Oh. Let me just quickly pencil something in.
That wouldn't be the first time.
What a dramatic retelling of Bewitched I've stumbled on in my head.
I really didn't think that this would be obvious until Act 2. But anyway, the settlement is led by, of course, the charismatic captain of the conquering force, Saul. And so while they're smoking this incense and trying to have a meeting of the minds to deal with this problem, they're praying to their god, et cetera, they're doing animal sacrifices, the works. Samuel meets eyes during one of these ceremonies with Samantha, and Samuel has one of his visions again, and he envisions his impending death by a rock, and that's all he sees, and he gets worried. Samantha notices that he's just staring off into space, and she thinks that he's, like, kind of hitting on her. So she starts having a vision of her own, which is of Samuel and her, you know, living a life of bliss, where she gets to travel around as basically, like, this, like, proto-queen figure, and gets to leave her boring husband.
Some Sam-on-Sam action, one might say. Yeah.
In fact, she even dreams that she conceives a child with him. And in the dream, he instructs her to name the girl Tabitha. They return.
Yep.
They later go to...
So, can I... I need to pause the podcast here. I'm sorry. I thought I was just...
This, I didn't know. Lee, I didn't realize I actually blew up your spot that, real bad.
Of all the, this is like monkeys writing Shakespeare. You could have put out 100,000 of these, and Bewitched retelling would never have made the top million. Like not in a 100 years.
Boof,
ba, boof. Oh my god, this is incredible.
I love it. I'm sorry. I need to also give you a 10 right away. But go ahead, keep going.
All right, so. They decide that the best course of action would be to rebuild the Temple of Israel. So they locate a local quarry, and Saul and Samuel and some other able-bodied men from the village go down there. At this point in my notes, I have something written, Donkey Trouble in the Quarry. I don't know. I don't know the specifics.
I don't care. That sounds amazing.
No. Beasts of burden are giving them trouble, and they don't know what's happening.
Can it just be like a? Can it be a cut screen where just that comes up in text, and then it's like 3 years later, and then it's a whole different thing?
Sure, you know, I like that. It's 3 minutes later because a result
like
of the
Anderson movie, Part 2, Donkey Trouble in the Quarry.
Yeah, they're all like wiping their brows, like, "Whoo, that was some real trouble."
And then we don't have to film anything. And
the donkey budget is like nothing on this movie.
Thank God we put down that donkey rebellion.
Oh, this is wonderful.
Hey, anything to save money on something like this. So,
hell yeah. Yeah. Always.
So,
you don't have to get...
What?
Nothing.
It was
a joke to myself.
Wait, really quick. Daniel?
Mm.
Is this going to be a crossover with I Dream a Genie at the end?
You know, I thought about just making sure this had a secured place in the Screen Gems universe, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Because we are close to where some of that stuff happens, right?
Maybe. Sure.
Yeah, I guess.
Nominally.
All right, so as a result of this donkey trouble at the quarry, a rock tumbles down and mortally
Rock
wounds.
The Dwayne Johnson?
No, a not
a rock,
a,
the
a
country?
Person, a no. A rock. No. It falls
the like Johnson. the amorphous, like the just concept of a type of musical genre.
Oh no, I can see why you'd be confused, but it's actually a large boulder. Maybe, well, see, if you don't know about rocks, how do you explain a rock from first principles?
It's composed
pretend
of
Jeff
minerals.
Bridges in Starman, and then do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know how like rivers have sediments? Well, imagine that getting compacted.
Oh, we're doing it. Oh, we're really doing it.
All right. Anyway, this rock mortally wounds Samuel, and it's ironic because he totally saw it coming. And and we look up, and everybody's panicking about their leader being wounded by this giant rock, and none of them notice, as the audience does, a strange, like semi-feral looking woman regarding them from the ridgeside above the quarry. It's Andorra, played by Whoopi Goldberg. She's in like
think that's
desert
great casting,
wear.
By the way.
What's that?
I think that's great casting.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Works out.
Mm-hmm. She's in like desert druidic wear. She looks like her eyes are kind of like whited out. She looks to be magical in some way, but we're not quite mm-hmm. sure how. She disappears sure. in a puff of purple smoke. All right, so they return to the village, and Samantha suspects that Saul killed Samuel out of jealousy. Because he could fuck. Tell what was going on. Because
that is a total Bible thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So she, Samantha begins having visions at the temple, at the now completed temple. We're going to fast forward through time. There's going to be like a model scale fast forward building of the temple sequence.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Sure.
And, but all the visions she's now having are bad trips. See, the demonic form of Beelzebub, who looks like Paul Lynn, appears before her and entices her to return to the quarry. She goes there while her husband goes on another military campaign, this time against the Philistines. The quarry is now very spooky. There's lots of visions that she had seen in the temple are now made manifest in the woods around her, or so she thinks. She reaches out, and some of them appear solid. This is where the movie gets very scary. But there she meets Andorra, who identifies herself as a witch and confirms that Saul, in fact, killed Samuel, which is not true, but the women weren't at the quarry at the time, and offers to... enacts a sort of like revenge, but for a price. The price is she has to become Tabitha's nanny. So then we go on, and basically it's Bewitched, as you noticed before, uh-huh. where this witch is moved in with a woman whose husband isn't there all the time, and they have hijinks, and like the household chores are done with necromancy. And but a woman played by Sally Field, who's their neighbor, Kravitzia, suspects that Andorra is not what she seems.
So Mrs. Kravitz.
Yeah, Kravitzia drums up a lot of like village, hysteria about the presence of a witch in their midst. All the while, Andorra is teaching Samantha magic and how to commune with Beelzebub, who she warmly refers to as Uncle Al Arthur. Kravitzia leads a peasant revolt
yes.
one night against the power duo of Andorra and Samantha. Samantha doesn't really feel it coming because she uses her newfound necromantic prowess to summon a spectral Swayze who romances and counsels her in the evening. This is I only included this sex scene because I think I saw it on the poster. Or at least I saw I saw a spectral Swayze occupying the same space as, I think, Demi Moore. I'm not sure. A woman.
Probably. Sure.
I'm willing at this point to throw you the spoiler of the poster is a ghost Swayze holding.
Oh, Demi holding. Moore. Okay. Well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah, but kind of. I have some issues with that when we get into the actual plot.
Okay.
But okay.
All right.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Maybe the counseling is just
Seth
platonic.
Seth couldn't just let a story wash over him? Big fucking shock. Let's see.
Nope.
All right. So, meanwhile, Kravitzia's revolt is happening outside their window. And mid-revolt, Saldarin returns from his military campaign. He is very wounded, and very few of his men have returned with him. Turns out the Philistines are much more difficult than the Canaanites to attack, especially when you yourself are not psychic. So,
turns out
as he walks through the door of his own home, Kravitzia stabs Andorra through the heart with a pitchfork, period specific hay pitching device.
Farm implement. Yeah.
So an axe maybe. and she dies. Act three. Ailing and terribly wounded, Samantha and her plucky little Tabitha slowly nurse Saldarin back to health as well as his army. But seeing him humbled in this way, the witches start to pity him and feel for him, and he himself has gone through a change of heart being humbled by the Philistines. So,
and at this point in the movie, he's played by a different actor because we've switched from black and white to color.
Exactly. But it's seamless, and no one comments on it except for everyone in the theater. So, Saldarin implores his wife, who he now knows or starts to suspect has necromantic powers, to resurrect Samuel so that he can learn how to defeat the Philistines. So, they return to the quarry, and they are surrounded by the same foul, spectral figures of the previous act. Samuel and Beelzebub are resurrected together from the ceremonial pit, which is what the quarry really is. It's this ancient thing called an ob that I learned about on my Wikipedia adventure. It's very fascinating.
cool.
The ancient peoples, they thought they could resurrect gods. This is like, it's really interesting. Yeah. But anyway... Assuming the audience knows all that, the present assembled are met with a terrible vision of the two who merge together, darkness and the light coming together. Going to be very new age, very trippy, lots of like 90s era video effects. Yeah, it's
excellent.
It's spectacular.
Yeah, like Raiders.
There's
where
a superimposed owl.
Ghosts.
Yes.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I buy it.
And Andorra appears. And she kind of like sits on the side of the vision, though, kind of mystery science theater. Is that how it goes? Yeah, mystery science theater 3000.
They sit down in front, off to the edge. Yeah,
yeah.
Yep.
Watching the vision with the rest of them, and the vision that they see is horrifying. It depicts the end of Saldarin's army, and really the end of the Israelites themselves. But Andorra, thankful that her life was basically what was tried to have been spared by Saldarin, throws a little black box into the vision that no one knows about, and she just whispers the word hope before she again disappears in a puff of purple smoke.
Oh my.
So, the battle happens the next day. It goes as foretold. The city burns, and Tabitha and Samantha... witness this to their terror and horror. Saldarin is slain, as is the rest of his army. But Tabitha and Samantha are able to escape into the wilds of the Andorian countryside, accompanied by a spectral Swayze. The end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Woo.
So I think that was faster than last time. I hope. Thank you.
Yeah. Very good.
So this is based on an actual story in the Bible that I barely remember as a kid in Sunday school, where there is, in fact, a necromancy witch
who
resurrects a former prophet to try to guess at the likelihood of the Israelite success against the Philistines. Which I remember as a kid hearing about and thinking, this This brings up so many questions.
Yeah.
There's an afterlife, but there's also this, like, quasi-afterlife where you're summonable by witches, and also witches exist. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's worth a reread.
It's kind of accurate to this movie, though. Yeah. So, I mean...
Also true. Also true.
I will say, Daniel, it also really reminded me of this one Bible story where... the boss is coming to dinner, and you know, the woman of the house could easily use magic to make a 5-course meal and really impress him. But the husband is a real just fucking stick in the mud, and hijinks always, you know. And then there's maybe someone stops time. I don't really remember.
We all knew where that was going. Yeah,
stops time. No. Mm-hmm. Things appear and disappear with some movie magic. Yeah,
certainly, mm-hmm. certainly. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Mm. Super Nintendo Chalmers is there.
Yeah. No, we're not going to become a meme. Stop that.
Sorry.
Daniel, do you want to hear the one-sentence summary of Ghost, of the actual movie Ghost?
I desperately want to know this movie.
Yeah. I got it right here.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, this movie is crazy. Okay, so, after a young man is murdered, his spirit stays behind to warn his lover of impending danger with the help of a reluctant psychic.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you had a lot of major points.
Yeah, so there was a psychic in both. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
true. Patrick Swayze is named Sam in both of them, I believe.
What?
Oh, oh, yeah, that's true. Weird. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was crazy.
Wait, is Ghost actually a Bewitched then? No, that can't be.
Oh, shit.
I think it's a retelling of the Witch of Endor.
Ooh.
So, Daniel, do you want a slightly more involved?
I'm intrigued. This sounds actually pretty good, or something that I would really like.
It sounds interesting.
Okay.
I saw Seth's face after he watched it. And he appeared to have emerged from the movie Chain.
Mm-hmm.
That does not surprise me. Yeah.
Well, let's see what I could do here. Let's see if I could give it justice. So Swayze and Tony Goldwyn are like investment bankers or some shit like that.
Well, it starts off super spooky. Let's not forget that. It's super spooky at the beginning.
It's like
with
noises. It's an H.R. Giger painting in the beginning. It's very confusing. Yeah.
also going on at the beginning. Swayze and Demi Moore are together. They're like building a giant crazy artist loft together. Anyway, they're very happy. Tony Goldwyn's the friend. Kind of business dealing things go on that are really shady. We don't know this just yet, but essentially Tony Goldwyn's character steals a bunch of money from Swayze's accounts that he's working on because he's laundering it for unseen villain type people. Swayze's catching on to it, so he pays a guy to kill him. Swayze becomes a ghost and he's trying to understand like what's happened to him because he hasn't moved on yet, but he's still there, and you know, he can only interact somehow with certain things.
And I think the effects are really good here, where
especially
like,
for the time period,
for 1990, like, yeah, not bad.
Yeah, Swayze.
A lot of the stuff with Subway Train, like the Subway Train stuff, looks really good.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that more.
Mm. So over the course of this, he finds out that his friend is responsible, and he realizes that Demi Moore is going to be in danger because of this. Also, he meets Whoopi Goldberg, who is a fake psychic.
Oh.
But it turns out she's an actual medium because she can hear him talk.
But not see him.
She can only hear him.
Oh, she can hear him talk with the ones who have crossed over.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is something she didn't even know because she had just been a fake this whole time.
Oh. Yeah, and had been scamming people out of their money and doing, you know, all kinds of like cold calling bullshit. Where it's like, oh, I hear a name, Hispanic lady that's looking for her dead husband. Is it Maria? Is it Consuela? Et cetera.
It is weird though. So like he breaks this boundary for her where she can now actually hear ghosts, and then all of a sudden she's off to the races. Like she has actual like people can embody her and like use her body and shit just because like Patrick Swayze showed up one day. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the key master and she's the gatekeeper.
Sure. Justin makes me feel good.
He eventually convinces Whoopi Goldberg to aid him, and they get the money and just give it to a bunch of nuns, which, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, Sister Act. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, shit.
Also, she eventually is able to convince Demi Moore that this is real, what's happening, and Patrick Swayze isn't able to inhabit Whoopi Goldberg's body so they can have one last moment together.
Yeah, that was weird, but we'll talk about really that weird. More.
Boy,
yeah.
Boy.
And in the meantime, the bad guys figure out what's going on, and they both end up getting killed in the process of trying to kill Demi Moore and Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm-hmm.
And they end up, what is this movie's version of going to hell, which is shadowy creatures drag them away, screaming, terrifying shit.
Yeah, pretty dark.
Yeah.
So is
the death scene of Tony Goldwyn's character is fucking cool.
Yeah.
We could talk about that too. And then the end of the movie is finally like Patrick Swayze's work is done. He's protected the people that care about him, and he's turned around Whoopi Goldberg's life, and you know, he can go off to the white light. It is a literal white light.
Yeah.
And the last thing, you know, he says during the movie is like, all the love that I have in me, I get to take with me. This is wonderful. And like, you know, he goes away, and that's Ghost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, more or less, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of crazy shit, though.
It sounds compelling to me, to be honest.
It's very interesting, like, structurally, because it's a comedy.
What?
But also
a thriller. I felt like genuinely tense. A bunch of it. I was genuinely, like, worried about them.
Yeah.
So the guy who directed this movie also directed Airplane.
Weird.
Really?
Interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. Wouldn't have guessed that. Yeah.
So there's we were talking about this earlier today. A lot of this movie is like Patrick Swayze just standing on the screen while other people are acting together, like just talking at them,
and they're not reacting, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, and like it could have been. I read a lot of interviews with cast members where they all accepted these roles. And everybody down to a T says, yeah, I accepted this role because I thought this movie is either going to be huge. It's either going to be really good and a huge success, or it's going to be such a big failure that no one's even going to remember it exists.
Yeah.
And they, I think at least, pulled off the what could have been just cringeworthy, dumb staging.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
And it does. I think it does succeed.
Oh yeah, but definitely. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, by the same right, like, yeah, I didn't really consider this a comedy, but there are comedy moments in it that are very good. Like Whoopi is like she
Whoopi
shines
is
the whole time.
Amazing in this movie. In fact, I was flagging. Like I was like, God, this is fucking stupid. Until Whoopi showed up, and then I was like, All right.
She shows up pretty late too.
She does.
Yeah,
it's a 2-hour movie. She doesn't show up till about 45 minutes in.
Yeah. I will say, so they started out with one of the good scenes, I thought, early on, and it shows the camaraderie between what's-his-name and Patrick Swayze pretty well. It's
Gary?
Like one of the first scenes.
Oh, whatever the fuck his name is.
Tony
Goldwyn.
Guy.
Yeah, fuck boy.
Yeah, fuck boy.
He is a total fuck
like
boy, Daniel. God, he is
such
just
a fuck boy.
Oh, the
he's
hair
like
is out
garbage.
Of control. Yeah.
It looks like his hair is crispy the entire time.
Yeah,
it's made of shredded wheat. It's very weird.
He makes a move on Demi Moore literal days after the death.
Yeah.
The murder of her husband in front of her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the dead husband, and he's just like, so... Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. I spilled coffee all over my shirt. Let me take it off.
Yeah.
That actually
happens?
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that a great move?
Garbage. Oh, let me grab you another shirt. And he's like, no, it's fine.
I'm
it'll
cool.
dry.
Yeah, I'll air dry. His tits out.
I mean, he was pretty cut.
He looked good.
Everyone was cut in this movie.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
Fuck. And for the first, hour of this movie, any time that Patrick Swayze wasn't shirtless, he was wearing a power suit. So
yeah.
like those are the only two modes.
Yep. Yeah, the scene in the beginning, though, it's very fun. They're in this super crowded elevator. There's like 15 people. They're right in the middle of everybody.
And this is kind of a, it's like a super bro-y dumb scene. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I liked it. Yeah.
And, I hated it.
Tony coughs. And Patrick Swayze is like, oh, did you see a doctor about this? And they just fall into this goof, like, without even, like, a second glance. And he's like, oh, yeah, I mean, he said it's pretty contagious. I probably shouldn't be at work. And the people in the elevator kind of look around at him. And then he's like, what about the rash on your genitals? And he goes, oh, yeah, it's all over the place now. It's really bad. It's really bad. And this goes on.
I thought this scene was funny.
Yeah, yeah, it was good. He's like, I probably shouldn't be touching people. And then inexplicably, like, paws at all the people around him. It's like, it's good, clean airplane fun. Like, yeah, it makes sense now.
Good, clean airplane.
Yeah, true. Like airplane director now, I'm like, okay, I get it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We brought up the subway a lot. Seth, do you want to talk about that?
Well, so at the beginning, Patrick Swayze can't interact with physical objects in the world. He has no phantasmagorical powers. He's just around yelling at Whoopi Goldberg. In fact, he's not yelling at Whoopi Goldberg at that point, but he's just yelling at no one for a while. And
random ghosts that he run into are trying to, like, dude, chill, you're a ghost.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, when he's in the emergency room with his own body, there's, like, where they, like, have put him in a body bag, more or less. There's, like, this hilarious old Jewish man that is just, like, hanging out, being like, hey, it's no problem now. And he, like, peeks into his abdomen. He's like, ah, gunshot, that'll always kill you. And is, like, making fun of
broader comedy than I thought from the synopsis. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a lot of comedic
moments.
It
has its moments. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So there are, like, every once in a while you'll run into a ghost that is doing something goofy. But he, like, runs into Vincent Schiavelli, like, in a subway train. And
famous character actor. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, gets into a fight with him and is, like, pushed out of the walls of the subway train. And then later on, he meets up with the subway ghost again and learns how to move physical objects from this guy. And how it's about, like, passion and your emotions.
Yeah,
and
holding on to your passion to manipulate things in the real world. Yeah.
Though, clearly, Vincent is totally insane and, yes, is just completely bazonkers and is like, this is my subway train, and fights anybody he sees who's in there. Wow. And just, like, fucks with people on the train all the time.
Which is pretty ridiculous. It's New York City. Everybody, even ghosts, need to ride the fucking subway. Right?
Yeah, it's
true. Well, no, he's like trapped there, isn't he? Like, I thought he was, like, forever, like,
no, I think that he's a crazy person that is obsessed with the train.
Yeah, because that's where he did die there, but, like, it seems like it's his decision to remain.
Oh, yeah, okay. Fair, like, enough. Fair enough. There's, I mean, it doesn't actually come up in this movie that much, but, like, there's always that old ghost adage that you can only haunt those things that were important to you in life, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But he definitely seems trapped on this train.
Yeah,
and is a crazy person.
So you mentioned that he teaches him how to do this. This is when I thought this was Jeffrey Tambor and not other guy. And I said, I wrote down, Tambor is Yoda. They even kind of made him look like him with the hair and the whatnot. But like Swayze fucks around in the world and does nothing of any consequence. And then he comes back to him and this guy is like, he reluctantly is like, I will teach you the ways of being a ghost. And, like, he learns all of his powers from him on this, the subway, that might as well be Dagobah. Like, it's very Yoda for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, why not? I'll give you that one.
Yeah.
So what other?
Well,
are there other moments that like feel really like we should talk about?
Yeah, like every time
the
an
most
object.
Famous scene.
What was that?
We could talk about the most famous scene.
Yeah, we can talk about that, which
should.
I have major issues with.
No. Okay. But bring up, you were bringing up something else first. Go for it.
Okay, well, first off, every single time that an object goes through Patrick Swayze, because he's kind of like semi-permeable, every time something goes through, it looks like he came. Like, he's just like...
For those of you listening at home,
you know what Seth looks like right now.
You know what my face looks like. It's
picture...
Ridiculous. ridiculous. His
picture
face,
Elijah Wood's O face. Ooh, gross.
But then he followed it up with a second example, which was like Elijah Wood's like anti O face.
Yeah, the antithesis. No,
the tape went backwards. Like,
yeah. Oh no!
Oh God!
It does like keep happening and keep happening, and he's constantly surprised by like everything in this movie. Like,
yeah,
he can't get over the fact that any of this shit happens dozens of times.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it takes place over a course of like a few weeks. He's not been a ghost very long.
I guess, but you walk around every day walking through shit. You think by like the middle of day one, you'd be like,
you'd be like, oh yeah, I can walk through doors without going moose.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah.
What if it feels good?
Ah, Bustin makes me feel
good. Moving through things is Bustin.
Bustin does make him feel good, I guess. Oh,
uh-oh.
Yeah.
No, but that brings me to probably my biggest issue with this movie. Fellas,
uh-oh.
This is a hot take. I'm pretty sure Patrick Swayze is a bad actor.
Oh, no!
I was about to ask you about this, because it seems like he has to do a lot of very difficult things in this movie.
Yeah, there are a lot of times where his face is just like...
Alright, let me... Can I...
And he's just like doe-eyed and just staring at nothing with his mouth half open.
Yeah, but he's acting... Even though there's other people there, and like clearly they filmed everyone at the same time.
Yeah.
He is acting in a vacuum in almost every scene.
Yeah.
Like,
he still looks goofy as shit the entire movie.
If anything, I think he's overacting, perhaps because like in Dirty Dancing and other roles, for instance, he played like cool guy who's supposed to be very cagey and whatever.
Well, his previous movie to this was one of my favorites, Roadhouse, and there is no cooler guy character on earth than fucking Dalton from Roadhouse.
Right. So like in those movies, he has to play like stone cold, like I know what I'm doing. I'm the coolest dude around. And he's supposed to be a little more personable in this. So maybe he just didn't know how to do that. And so he overacted all of it.
Because he looks goofy as shit.
Yeah.
Even like before he even becomes a ghost in this movie, his character is a little bit of a goober. Like you could see
Yeah.
He's like that fun kind of like he'd be a good boyfriend.
No, he wouldn't. Yeah. He almost throws Demi Moore out of a window at one point, which is not.
That was
I'm so funny. You're gonna be standing near an open window, and I'm gonna pretend to push you out.
On that same note, he does also.
What a piece of shit.
They're trying to get that statue in the window that's like hanging from like a.
Feels like it would have been easier to bring it up the stairs.
Yeah.
And his
also weighed nothing, apparently.
Yeah. His response is like grab onto the scaffolding thing, drop kick it so it swings out and then back in and then catch it when it comes back in. And I was like, man, they just saw Dirty Dancing and they're like, we need some gymnastics or some shit up in here. Like, we gotta get
some
what we paid for. R.E. Swayze. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, if you had no idea, like, if you just knew that he was a ghost in this movie and didn't know how he became a ghost, you'd just assume that he fell out the window in that scene.
Oh, I did. I wrote that down. I was like, knowing that he's the one that dies, they set up many, like, is this it? Is this the one? And then not it until he gets...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My notes are just, like, covered with waiting for him to die, waiting for him to die. Waiting for him to die, because I wanted him to die so bad.
Oh, no.
Do you guys want to... Oh, sorry, Zach, go ahead.
I was going to say, they picked... I wrote down they Batman's parents did him in the alley. Like, it was...
Oh.
Of all the fun shit that he did that he could have died falling out a 10-story window, like, he just gets shot in an alley. It's so boring. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, it was a hired killer from his best friend.
Right,
that's
for
not
sure.
That boring.
No,
like,
yeah, well, we find out later,
from that fuckboy Gary, who I named Gary because I couldn't remember the character's name was Carl.
Oh, I still didn't remember.
I just kept calling him Gary. I was like yelling at the screen like, fucking Gary,
you got real close. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's four letters.
It might as well be.
You want to talk about that one scene?
We'll
talk about that scene.
I think we have to.
So,
about to get sticky in here, Daniel.
Ooh, it's about to get real sticky.
Oh,
literally and figuratively.
Thank you for the trigger warning.
Mm-hmm. You're in the splash zone. Get ready.
Well, the Righteous Brothers are playing at the time. That
not Gallagher, not the Gallagher Brothers.
I am confident that this song, that the Righteous Brothers were actually ghosts, and this is a bunch of ghosts singing this song, because it's very
in
much...
In case you couldn't tell, it's Unchained Melody. Right,
yeah. It's the Unchained Melody, but they are clearly ghosts, like, howling, like, oh my lord.
So, Daniel, are you familiar with, because this scene has been parodied everywhere.
So often, yeah.
Two people sitting at a pottery wheel doing pottery very sexy, one of them sitting behind the other.
Oh, yes.
That's from this movie.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the scene that... I've met a couple of women who say they have, like, a sexual awakening in this movie. And so far, you haven't really described anything that would make that very clear to me, but...
Is this
what they're talking about? Is this...
Yeah, it has to be.
Okay. Almost certainly.
Yeah, so Patrick Swayze, who was in fucking Dirty Dancing, said that this scene was the sexiest scene he was ever part of.
Not even possible. Not remotely possible. Yeah. No way.
Not for me, it wasn't. But no. Yeah. Okay. Well, like, so he sits down behind Demi Moore while she's making pottery on a pottery wheel, and it collapses, and then, you know.
Well, no, he fucks
yeah,
it
he
up.
Yeah, he fucks it up.
Well, yeah.
She's like an artist and is doing some work, and he's like, uh-oh, my banker's hands are too clumsy.
My dumb banker's hands.
But then it's like, can I help you fix it? And she's like, yeah, let me take, and she's guiding his hands, and then he starts guiding her hands, and they're clearly just, like, jerks. Off this
right. Yeah, no, it's clearly very phallic and goopy.
That is the only way to center a piece of clay on a pottery wheel. It is true to form. That is, you make a dick and then you smash it down, and that's how you do it. That's just
and then you jam your fingers in it and spin it
you
out.
Do.
Yeah, everyone knows.
You get both sides. It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what a fun little trivia about this scene is? Demi Moore and Zucker, I think Jerry Zucker, the director of the movie, wanted it to be very realistic, so they took pottery classes together.
It's
so cute.
I had two notes about this. When she's doing shit, when it's like, I thought it was like stunt hands for a while because it looks very capable, but then her face is in a bunch of them and she actually knows what she's doing. Like, she's doing it well. And then the second one is, so they go from this, like, holding each other's hands covered in slop and gross.
Yeah,
and
okay. I'm glad you saw this too.
Yeah, elbow deep in clay. And then all of a sudden, perfectly clean and, like, fucking in the living room. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
There was a 5-minute cooldown period where they all went to the sink and just fucking scrubbed the shit out of everything. Like,
there
that really
was
ruins the mood.
A period where Demi Moore said, wait.
Yeah.
I cannot get another UTI.
Yeah.
I simply cannot.
She's like, we just bought this couch. I don't want to fuck it up. Come on. That's like, and then he's like, all right, you still want to do the thing? And she's like, yeah, all right, cool. And then they go to the living room. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it they've skipped all that. It was very upsetting.
Zach, it sounds like you're asking for, like, the mumblecore remake of Ghost.
Yes. Yeah, I want the mumblecore.
All those interstitial scenes are actually included. Yeah, yeah.
I want the silent washing your hands at a sink Duplass nightmare out of every movie ever. Yes.
Correct. I mean, so let's recast this right now. Obviously, it's Greta Gerwig.
And Jay Duplass. Or no, sorry. The other one. Mark Duplass.
Mark Duplass, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's got to be Greta Gerwig for sure.
Yeah.
But the pottery kind of sucks. He'll never tell her. Yeah.
So having known,
but also she has a trust fund and she still succeeds.
Yeah. Yeah. And she says all her lines really slow and it's really irritating. Yeah. Okay.
Wow. We just made Mumblecore Ghost, boys.
So knowing that this scene was in this movie. I thought that it was going to, like, repeat later with his ghost hands guiding her. Like, I thought this scene happens once and is all, like, I guess super sexy somehow. And then also, like, later, after he's dead and is just, like, hanging around her apartment all the time, like a weirdo.
Oh, I thought this was happening while he was in spectral form.
You see, this is the very beginning of the movie, because I absolutely thought that this scene was also the spectral form. But
same,
it turns
very
out
much the same.
It was only physical.
Wow.
Yep.
And
so
or corporeal,
I
suppose, is probably the better term.
So sure, there were two people covered in clay.
Yeah.
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 So when I was maybe like
They need two sinks? I don't know how they're gonna wash that fast.
Also, clay down a drain is a fucking nightmare. You don't put clay down a drain. That's just crazy down.
Mm-hmm. When I was like 6 or 7, this movie was on HBO constantly, so I watched it a lot.
Sure.
But I also had memories of him ghost pottering with her later. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know what.
I totally thought that it was gonna show up later. Yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, no.
So that was a little disappointing. Yeah. I don't think we've really given enough credit to Whoopi yet.
Yeah, we should talk about Whoopi she being really amazing in this movie.
We should maybe talk about Whoopi, and then I have one or two like trivia things, and then maybe we should head to ratings. So Whoopi was fucking incredible.
She's very good. She was so good. Because she was acting at nothing. She never gets to actually see Patrick Swayze. She just hears him.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so she's talking to an empty room, more or less, the entire movie.
And as I think Lee noted, she comes in like 45 minutes in, and it's been like bummer, 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 bummer. And then all of a sudden, Whoopi is like killing it and like being funny, and it's great. And all of a sudden, it's like, oh, okay, we're back.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she does that like. There was a period like around this time where she did the fucking Sister Act movies, and she was starring in a lot of stuff around this
Sister
time.
Sister Act
where,
like, 2, even, Back in the Habit,
where even, that is the second best subtitle of any movie ever after House 2, The Second Story.
My God.
We all know it.
But anyway, like, there was this period in the late 80s up through maybe the mid 90s when if Whoopi Goldberg was starring in a movie, even if the movie was bad, just her ability, because she started off doing one-woman shows. Yeah. That's how she got famous.
Oh,
like, her ability to just shift and transition and, like, move around a scene in and like, I don't know. It's really on full display here, because, like you guys were pointing out, she's technically not acting with anyone.
Yeah.
But still, like, there feels like it's real emotion.
The fact that she has
over
to... Yeah, she has to pretend like Patrick Swayze isn't actually in the room, which is what is really, really impressive to me.
Yep.
There's also, like, I mean, I guess maybe because it's a Zucker movie, she does a little, like, she does some stuff that almost verges on slapstick, but it feels less slapsticky, and that makes it more funny. Like, it's, I don't know.
And it's all in the middle of, like, these genuinely serious scenes, and so, like, it's a nice contrast.
It happens during the thriller portion of the movie.
Very true.
Whoopi is great in this.
Apparently Patrick Swayze is the one who told them to cast her, because he was such a big fan of her comedy.
Not bad.
Well, I think she's pretty fearless in what project she took on at the time, too, right? I mean, because...
Yeah, Theodore Rex, like, you know.
Oh, I guess that is a fearless...
famously, she sued the studio to try to get out of that, but, you know, like...
I was thinking more, because this is around the same time that she's on Star Trek, right? Or maybe it's a little bit before that.
Definitely.
She would probably be doing Star Trek now.
Which, I mean, this is 90, so TNG started in 1987 and went till 1994, so it's like right in the heart core. I mean, it's certainly not Time Zero Part 2 at the end of Season 6, but, I mean,
look,
I don't know.
Look how pleased with himself he is.
I mean... This is also, like, this is several years after The Color Purple, so people, like, know that she has serious chops.
Yeah,
like,
she had chops.
This is, like, she wasn't just a comedian making movies.
That's
like,
a good point.
But, oh, man, she is the star of this movie.
For sure.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
Hands down. And she won an Oscar for it, so.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ghost won 2 Oscars. Best Supporting Actress for Whoopi.
Mm-hmm. Best Ceramic Scene? And,
Best Ceramic Best Scene. Original Screenplay.
No.
Oh.
Not like Best Effects or anything like that?
No.
None of the minor technical awards, like writing? Oh, it did have writing.
It did win writing, it also got nominated for Best Picture that year. It lost to Dances with Wolves. This is a better movie.
No one
could
defeat Kevin Costner eating a buffalo heart.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was also the highest grossing movie of the year.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have the total number or the total money figures.
Let's hear.
Which that. Like the budget was $22 million and it made $505.7 million.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
In 1990, 500.
Well, I don't know what it made in that year. That's total gross.
Sure, that's a fuckload.
But
that's a good Avengers movie these days. Like, holy shit.
This movie looks way better than $22 million, especially with all the special effects.
The special effects are quite good.
And all those people were really famous. Where did they spend? They must have stretched the fuck out of that budget, yeah.
Got to get them points on the back end.
$500 million, Jesus Christ, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow, nice.
So what, does anyone have any other things they wanted to bring up?
I have one more short one. This movie confirms that cats can see ghosts.
I forgot about this.
And this is a thing I think we knew all along, but I'm glad that there's precedent for it now.
He even uses a cat as a weapon more or less before he learns how to manipulate things.
He weaponizes a cat against a murderer.
He does weaponize a cat using spooks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. That was very good. Yeah. That's my last one. I don't know. Go ahead.
All right. So we should do ratings then, right?
Yep. Sure. Yep.
Yep.
I can start off.
Yeah, go ahead.
So for the real movie,
IMDb. Do you want the IMDb?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The IMDb is a 7.0 with 169. Nice, nice, nice. Thousand. That's what it is. 7.
Okay.
Okay.
Nice.
Cool. I think that's pretty accurate. I think this movie could have been incredibly bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's amazing, but it has some very good things about it. Sure. And it is like a fucking miracle that they pulled off what they pulled off.
Yeah.
So I think like 7's fine. I think 7 is totally reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure.
Daniel, I think I have to do something. Something drastic.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh. And I think I have to give you the coveted 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10 for making the best film version of Bewitched out there. Move over Nicole Kidman and Will Ferrell, because you are now the second best version of Bewitched on film.
Well, thank you.
Oh, my God.
Well, your movie was profoundly stupid, and I love you for it.
To be fair, I mean, you called it early. Like, you wanted that movie, and then Daniel delivered that movie. So, like,
And I'm, again, that's very sorry. I thought I was just making a joke.
That makes
sense.
So,
yeah, that's my that's mine.
Okay.
Pretty pop culture deep,
Seth, you want to go?
Sure. So I'll start off with Daniel first. And for Donkey Trouble in the Quarry,
which got nominated this year for Best Foreign Language Short Subject.
Can we spin off that, please? We have to.
Seth, are you up to making a poster for Donkey Trouble in the Quarry?
Oh, yeah, no, I can do that. I don't have that much work this week. I can probably handle that.
Excellent.
So for Donkey Trouble in the Quarry, Judea Drift, we'll have
you son of a bitch.
I don't know. I enjoyed it despite its its ridiculous Bewitched orientation. Oh boy. So I'm gonna give it 7.3.
Okay.
It's like I'd watch it, but you know. So as for the original, I was really impressed with the visual elements of it for the most part, other than like the weird hell monsters and things like that, which is...
Yeah, those were surprisingly lazy considering the effort they put into everything else.
Yeah, but like the as Zach said, the Batman scene where he's like outside of his body, I thought like was done really, really well and was startling. Yeah. Though that was like fun. We talked about this in the other chat. Like, this movie could have been shorter, especially the end. The fucking end. I was just like, fucking, ghost die already. Like, it's...
Yeah,
this is
they share a ghost kiss at the end that lasts for at least three beats
it's
too
so
long.
Yeah. And they fucking Return of the King it, where he keeps, like, turning back and looking at a weird ghost thing, and then turning back and to camera. I was so frustrated with the end of it.
Yeah.
So that's why this movie is gonna get, like, a 6.8. It's good, and there are a lot of good aspects to it, and it's worth a watch, but, like, man, I have really hated Patrick Swayze in a lot of this. Like, he's good for having great abs. He's not that great of an actor.
I hadn't noticed it, when we talked about it, like, you're not wrong. You're definitely not wrong.
No. Yeah. We have to take this one off, Mike. But Zach, go.
Okay. Original Ghost, I'll also go 7. I think all criticisms are valid. Like it was very enjoyable, but all the dumb stuff is dumb.
Oh, we didn't talk about Fuckboy's death.
Fuckboy. Oh, yeah. Patrick Swayze is a ghost, murders two people, which is pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
He sure does.
Via cat.
Well, this fuckboy basically like lands in a. They're in a fucking warehouse, and he lands like in a windowsill, and a shattered window just falls down and impales him, and
it guillotines him like right in the heart. Yeah,
it is crazy. Brutal.
Yeah.
Have you seen the hand that rocks the cradle?
They got very practical on it.
Similar. Yeah.
Yeah.
That movie gave me a huge fear of greenhouses and just glass in general.
Sounds, I'm not going in there. No, similar, fuck you, Longwood Gardens. I'm not going in there.
Oh no, you're belaying the filliness of everything.
Oh, well, we've covered it, I think. Yeah. Daniel's movie. So there's a certain charm to this because you really shot for the stars, and I always like to reward that. Like,
okay,
anytime you swing big, like I'm way into that.
I don't know that the numbers back that up, but go for it.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you didn't do Star Wars, well, I guess you did do Bewitched, but it was like on purpose.
You weren't claiming that it wasn't Bewitched, unlike
right,
a certain
exactly.
person that claimed
exactly.
it wasn't Star Wars.
Oh, it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I'm gonna go like a solid 8.2 on that.
Wow.
One, I think. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like yeah. I think it had a
solid
lot of potential.
Showing.
It was
so
a good
glad
mix
that
of
you guys
like
the bridge.
Yeah, well, it was any
yeah,
any
be
like,
a real problem if we didn't.
Yeah, any strange retelling, and it seemed like yours had a bit more drama to it, which is always kind of fun. Like, yeah, I'm into it. So,
I mean. The drama of just the crushing boringness of domesticity.
Yeah, that's oof. Bleak, but yeah,
ooh,
you're not wrong.
Ooh, hot ooh, take. I want to see an Ibsen version of Bewitched.
Oh, dear.
What? Why?
Ooh. All right, so that
good
was
showing,
very,
Daniel. That
very
was solid.
Great. Yeah,
yeah,
very, very good.
I liked it a lot.
You have
clearly
defended your title.
It is a horrifying premise. I mean, the show Bewitched is terrifying if you think about it.
It is. No one ever really acknowledged
from the perspective
that.
Of Darren, at least, because he's basically dating someone who's not
though,
the same species.
Right.
That's
slowly realizing
true,
this,
and he finds out on their wedding night.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's some
but
fuckery.
He also pulls that bullshit fucking 50s idealistic, like, I'm the man of the house, I get to make the decisions, you're not a witch anymore. Anyway, we don't have time to talk about the witch.
Yeah, certainly.
What's up next week?
So next week we got Seth doing Son-in-Law, which I would imagine a lot of people don't actually know, probably.
I don't know what the fuck that is.
It depends on if they grew up in the 90s,
yeah,
I think.
It depends
on
if
thanks.
You're into...
Spoiler, now I have to do a 90s movie.
You know that
you don't know when it came out. I just said that people people watched it. In the
we gave you the names. The head star is Pauly Shore. Obviously, it's a fucking.
You did not give me the names yet. But
we're
all right.
Pretending. Well, this is Radio Man.
Oh, oops. Sorry.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say, guys, in honor of the late great Paul Lind and our champion for this week. Damn, Daniel.
Snuck it in.
Uncle Arthur.